When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent, match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Is it just me or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
This time the Bears were embarrassed on the field, not off
the field. No, they were embarrassed on the field.
And it was ugly.
That's exactly right.
Some of us thought that they would get the interim head coach bounce. Some of us talked ourselves into believing that the Bears couldn't be that bad again. And they were worse because that defense stunk.
The three words that best describe you are as follows, and I quote, stink, stank, stunk.
They were undermanned. They didn't have all their guys. They still had George Kittle.
The Bears.
Taylor is their lone offensive highlight. The punter is the best thing they had.
Yeah, that draft night exchange isn't so funny now.
No, it's not.
Caleb just texted me before saying, hey, you're not going to punt too much here, which is great, but...
You sure about that? You sure about that?
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
This is The Serious Show.
Let's go!
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Ruthie Polinsky in for David this morning. We're having a nice conversation, getting ready for the big day of sports talk. Ruthie, how are you? Good morning. You got to hit that button there.
On.
Are you there?
Hey, everyone.
All righty.
Mully, this is so exciting. I obviously work with David Haw more than I work with anyone else on the planet, but it's so exciting to get to do the show with you because I'm just the biggest fan of your show and
God
you too,
bless.
And it's
very
exciting.
Good. Yeah, David's a great guy, and he's at the College Hall of Fame dinner or something. I forget what he was doing, but he will be back in a couple of days. It's great to have you in because we were supposed to work together, I don't know, was it like a month ago, a couple of months ago?
Yeah.
And I came down with a mild case of death. I was out for a few days, but I've recovered since.
So happy to see that.
God bless you. Yes. I was worried, like, if anything goes awry, you're going to think that I've got some sort of, you know. I always worried, like, if you drop a couple of pounds, I'm worried that my friends will think I have cancer. You know, you just got to be careful. You got to be careful with people. You don't see them all the time.
Luckily, I had the pleasure of working with Mark Grody that day.
Yeah,
so Grody's, we had a great time.
Yep. He's so much fun.
He's the best.
Yeah, he's a great guy. So obviously, it's an interesting time of year. There's a little warm stove going on. It's fun to have the owners' meetings going on, and we're going to talk to John Heyman a little bit later. But we're pretty much all Bears, and my God, it's just been awful. I guess we never talked about the idea. We talked about guaranteed a losing season and what that meant and the hopes and dreams that were dashed. But we didn't even mention that they have been eliminated from the playoffs. Not that anybody was still living that dream or having that hope, but I feel like we should have played taps or something. We should have done something to just acknowledge that. And I see this morning as Dustin is putting together different notes that we never mentioned it. So I think everyone knew, but yeah, it's the season won't end in a Super Bowl.
Well, Fox put up the graphic on Sunday in the hunt.
Yeah,
Bears were still on there. I'm like, what are we doing? No longer.
That was before they lost, though, right?
Yes, correct.
Yeah. So I mean, and the Niners are still in the hunt. That was
very much.
We pretty much overlooked that storyline that they were still alive and they're. Division was such that I think they have the Rams. Is that right? That's a huge game. If they could win that game, well, both teams need to win that game. But if they could, they would still be alive, although obviously things have not gone as they might have hoped. But that's a really good team.
It feels like it was so long ago we were talking about in the preseason. We're like, well, you know, if the Bears have another 7-win season, you know, maybe that would be it for Matt Eberflus. And here we are.
Yeah.
They're going to be lucky to get 5 wins.
Yeah,
and it's just
right.
Like, it just feels like we were, you know, saying, maybe they'll get 8. If they could get 9, he's definitely safe. You know, it's just, it feels like it was so long ago.
I cannot believe that the last time they won was October in London. It just seems bizarre and insane. Because they came home from that trip, and I get it. You know, they had 3 fairly easy opponents, but they got the 3-game winning streak. They fly home. They got the bye week. And that was pretty much the rest of the year, right? They lose that game in Washington. I mean, you still kind of boggles the mind. And then they go to Arizona, and they had various injuries. But, boy, that loss at home to New England, I think, Dustin, is that when you declared – the Bears would never win another game the rest of the year.
I remember that.
It's his fault. I'm blaming you.
Just very smart, that Dustin.
Yeah, thanks. But that was a very beatable team, and the fact that they didn't even... And that, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine who was saying that the Niners game by a mile was the worst game of the year. And it's kind of like, well, you know, losing at home to New England
was
a pretty bad loss.
Yeah, the New England game was really, I think, for me, the moment where you're like, oh boy,
oh yeah,
like this is worse than anyone thought it was,
right?
And I think you look back and you say, okay, well, maybe they don't lose on the Hail Mary. Do they lose in Arizona? Maybe, but it looked. I remember thinking they looked so dead,
yeah,
in that Arizona game, and it felt like that Hail Mary had carried into that game. And I said, okay, well, you know what? New England, here you go. Worst team in the league at that time, arguably. And they just laid an egg. And it was so disappointing. And Molly, I was thinking about this last night as I was getting ready for the show. It feels like that maybe would have been the time if they were going to make a coaching change.
Yes.
That maybe should have been the time. And the reason I say that is because to fire a coach with 5 games left, what are you accomplishing in that moment? Because here's, and I'm not saying that, you know, there didn't need to be a change, but what I'm saying is that I think when you have 5 games left, not only are you not really playing for anything at that point, but for Thomas Brown to come in and say, okay, this is sort of my audition to be a head coach. We're going to be accountable. We're going to change the culture. This is a dip.
Right.
Let's unify the locker room. It's like, maybe you should have just the messaging is kind of not sitting well with me there, because I'm wondering if the message should have been, this is an audition for all of us.
Yes.
No one's guaranteed to be here next year, me included.
Yep.
It doesn't need to be, let's unify the locker. Like, we're not playing for anything here. So that's sort of where I'm struggling with sort of the timing of the transition. And I think it all goes back to the top. And what we're all seeing right now is sort of this dysfunction sort of come back into the light. Where, what went into kind of the discussions leading up to the firing of Matt Eberflus, if any, and why was the trigger pulled when it was pulled?
Well, it's an excellent question. You know, generally speaking, the way that I learned the NFL was this idea. I think this comes from Joe Gibbs. You can lose a game. Everybody can lose a game. Mistakes happen. We're all human. You can lose a game. You lose two games, you got to get on high alert. If you lose three games in a row, someone has to go. And that's when you make a move. That's when you bench a quarterback. That's when you, and I'm not suggesting they bench this quarterback. I'm just saying right. That's when you change things in the locker room, etc. So they lost three in a row. And they fired Shane Waldron. Then they lost three more. And unfortunately, it was also the way that they lost. And the end of that game in Detroit was so – I just don't know. I don't know what they could have done. I struggled, especially, you know, with Jalen Johnson going after him in the locker room and all that stuff. And – you know, we talked to Olin. Was it yesterday that we talked to Olin? And he suggested that that was the moment where Eberflus should have gotten his team back, where he goes right back at the guy and, you know, confronts him. And but he's not, that's not how he's built.
Mm-mm.
And he was not going to be able to do that. And he wasn't the sort of, you know, he's a very nice man, Eberflus. And he was an excellent, dare I say, elite play caller as a defensive coordinator. And boy, did they miss his ability to call defense in that game on Sunday. But I feel like that rule of three when you're putting together losses, I don't know what the next thing is.
Right.
I have no idea. But, you know, it is just maybe the way you lost games is much. And not just the way you lost games, but – you know, the accountability factor. When you lose that game in Washington, part of the problem was the penultimate play. It was the play before the game-losing play. Why you gave him 13 yards is mind-boggling. And then the explanation for it was very dissatisfying. And, you know, I just feel like that became an accountability factor that kind of, as you looked at the different ways of losing and not, you know, again, the play before in Green Bay where you let the clock run out and you don't try to get closer. I think there were just moments like that.
Right.
But I think Matt Eberflus, I think they honest to God missed him and his play calling on Sunday, because the one thing he was doing that you got to admire was limiting teams to field goals in the red zone. And we saw what happened. They scored 28 points in the first half. Now, one was brought back and they limited them to a field goal. So that's why it was 24-0. But man, when teams score touchdowns, you got problems. You just, your defense, there's just not a lot there. And I think the disappointing thing about that game, and I listened to Thomas Brown try to explain it, but the lack of focus, the lack of, you know, there was such big talk about the vibe changing and the energy, and like, there's smiles on people's faces.
Love the smiles.
They were smiling. They were smiling earlier in the year. I saw them smiling on Hard Knocks.
Yeah. I think it may have been Mark Rohde with you guys on the pregame show being like, that was kind of getting overblown. Like, these guys have been in good moods all year. They like each other. Like, they enjoy each other's company. We've seen that all year long, and they enjoy football. And I do think there's something to say for, like, the quality of football players that they have acquired. It's just maximizing that talent that I think was so exposed on Sunday. When you have a head coach leaves, but you're not just losing the head coach, like, it kind of, perhaps, dare I say, Matt Eberflus was covering up a lot, because there wasn't a natural head coach in waiting. There wasn't a natural defensive coordinator in waiting.
Right.
And I think you're seeing sort of, and which, you know, on the other side of that spectrum, maybe also exposes Matt Eberflus and maybe his ability to put a staff together. But it's just fascinating to see sort of how it all just really fell apart in front of our faces. And like you said, after all the talk and all the excitement and the Tevin Jenkins, I love hearing Olin talk about, you know,
that was powerful. I thought he was spot on with that.
Yeah, that really kind of hit home for me because Tevin, guess what? You might not be here next year.
Oh,
so
no, he's in trouble.
That was, yeah.
But, it was true, that Rock'em Sock'em Robots right. play, whatever, tearing a guy's helmet off, that was so dumb. It's one thing to put your hands in the face, and I know it's illegal, but to drive his helmet like that, it's always going to get called. And then to be as kind of, oh, yeah.
Love Flus, but.
Yeah.
Well, I love Flus.
Yeah,
but.
No, he's a very nice man, and I don't know that he was ever going to be a great head coach, but
I'm quoting Tevin Jenkins there because Tevin Jenkins
said,
I love Flus.
I love Flus, but the thing you said earlier is accurate.
Like, yeah.
It was rough. And I think there's a lot of that kind of out there. There's a lot of lack of explanation on different plays and why they happen. And I really felt when I went back and watched some of the game yesterday, I didn't watch the whole thing, but I watched a good portion of it.
God bless you.
I got worn out watching it. But I did think that there was a lack of focus. There is, mm-hmm. you know, you don't drop passes unless you are not focused and paying attention to what you're doing. And, you know, we can talk about all the different blunders. You know, the bottom line is that's a really well-coached team in San Francisco. That guy is an elite play caller. And, you know, boy, the whole George Kittle game was so difficult to watch because it was as if there was no one in the same zip code as him. I mean, some of those plays, he was not just open. They had schemed him open on some of them. It was just too easy. Too easy.
It's embarrassing.
It was embarrassing. And that's tough. I mean, it's tough to come in. You haven't called plays since the preseason and you know, you're going to replace a guy that, as we said, did pretty well as a play caller. But, you know, this is where they're at, and this is it's going to be really interesting to see where things go from here. I think everybody is trying to figure out. The names are being floated out there. We know, you know, round up the usual suspects, as they said in Casablanca. we know who the names are. We know who the guys are.
Yeah.
We just don't know who's going to get this job. We also don't know who wants this job. And I know that that's a controversial thing to say because it is the most coveted job in the NFL, according to Kevin Warren. We'll see. We'll mm-hmm. see. I think there are elements to it that give people pause.
I think the quarterback has a lot to do with that more so than the maybe the and the roster, of course. But I think like the quarterback has a lot to do with it. Well, Trevor Lawrence might be hanging out in Jacksonville. No pressure down there. I mean, you want to go just talk in front of like a nice group of Floridians and have a nice conversation about football in your weekly press conferences. Like no pressure. Like you're not going to get, you know, assaulted by the media the way you do in this city. And I just, coveted is such an interesting word. What does that mean? It's just going to be fascinating to see how it plays out and the personality of who they pick to fit this city.
Yeah, I you know, I'm not sure they need to pick who fits the city. I think they need to pick who fits the quarterback. I go back to last year. That's the one thing that I can't get past is, you know, Thomas Brown's good enough that in 18 days he goes from passing game to coordinator to the offensive coordinator to the head coach of the team, and yet you didn't hire him to be the offensive coordinator when he came in and interviewed. You hired Shane Waldron, and my God, that did not work out.
We all know how that ended, yep.
And I mean, it started bad. It didn't work. You had the scripted plays. You had all this, you know, a lot of noise from the players about it. And that guy, again, the very idea that the people that hired him, and I'm not going after Ryan Poles, believe it or not. I think he should get another hire. But I do think the idea that the people that brought you Shane Waldron now get to bring you the head coach gives me pause. And it makes me wonder, you know, they knew they were drafting Caleb Williams. They kind of made him the starting quarterback before they even drafted him. And they brought that guy in as the guy that was going to – the most crucial position, the guy you had to have working with the quarterback doesn't give you a lot of confidence in the decision they will eventually make here. But, you know, there's still four games left, man. That is a quarter of the season back
in
the day. So
many games.
A lot of games left, and it's got to get better, and it's got to get better in a hurry, and there's got to be more – focus, and it's a lot of little things that you need to work on. And, you know, it doesn't get any easier going to Minnesota. You know, Brian Flores is a great defensive guy. And we know that Kevin O'Connell is not only a fine Irish American, but a guy that can call some plays. And that team is coming off a great performance. The quarterback just threw five touchdowns.
I know.
It could be another national embarrassment on Monday Night Football. Let's hope not.
But you hope that the way they played them so well,
yes,
here,
repeatable
is repeatable.
Yeah,
but that's a hard place to play.
It's not easy.
It's a beautiful stadium, Bank of America. Is Bank of America?
Yeah,
yeah, beautiful.
That's where Bank of America is located. I think
U.S. Bank.
I think U.S. Bank's located there. I think.
What is it?
I think. United Healthcare is located there too, but let's not get into that. I don't know why you brought that up, but we're going to let that go. That's the most amazing story ever, and they caught the guy.
U.S. Bank Stadium in Minnesota.
U.S. Bank.
Minneapolis. Thank you, Kevin Warren.
Yeah, he helped build that, and he's going to build something here, and it's going to be spectacular, and we don't quite know where it's going to be. I told David I was out at Woodfield earlier in the week, and I made a point of driving past Arlington because
I'm a stadium nerd, I would say.
Yeah, I think we all are. But I love that place. I love that racetrack. I spent many a lost hour in that place, and it just kind of breaks my heart that it's kind of overrun and it's just sitting there. And
yeah,
you know, it was such a great facility. I don't want the Bears to move there, but I'd like them to bring back the racetrack.
Okay.
I do enjoy all of the, I enjoy sports that no one watches anymore, right? I like baseball. I like boxing and horse racing.
There you go.
I should have been born in the 20s. I don't know how I wound up in this era, but what are you going to do? It should be fun though to watch the rest of the season. I don't know
fun.
That it's going to get much worse. I here's the thing about this suspicion that some players are quitting or that some players, you know, and I would have no problem if I were a coach of explaining this to every one of those guys. You know, you're on tape too. They're not just looking at me and my coaching. I'm not just the guy that has to get his resume together. Every one of you guys is on tape and is being scrutinized. And if you think that the way to get through a football season is by mailing it in, I got news for you. You may be mailing your career in. And that is the reality of the NFL. Guys are on tape 24/7. They got everybody. They are scrutinized. Teams break down tape. They see when players stop caring. That's a real problem in your career. I would say focus. Do the best job you can do. Get through the season. And give it everything you got because you want to continue your career.
I am very fascinated to see sort of how Thomas Brown also evolves in his role because I think obviously everyone loves hearing him speak.
Yeah, he's great.
Great. But there's a lot that goes into being a head coach on game day. And, you know, it was only his eighth game of calling plays, let alone his first game being a head coach. And there's just so much that goes into that, and it's so overwhelming, not just on game day, but the whole week of preparation and preparing. And and so it'll be interesting to see, does he get better?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's got a lot on his plate. I honestly thought it was a mistake when he was promoted to head coach. I would have, and I don't know who the obvious candidate was, but someone like John Hoke could probably, you know, move guys around. What I think the guy was doing a really good job of calling plays and dealing with the quarterback, and to add more to his plate, it really gives me pause. I'm also worried about the quarterback. I think he's now getting to a point where the number of hits are getting out of control, the number of sacks and QB hits. And, you know, he's got a knack. He's a really talented player. It's not. It's like he's one of these guys that he doesn't really get crunched. You know, maybe once a game he might take a big hit, but he doesn't take a ton of those. Even when he got sacked a couple times, he's kind of going down, and he's not. It's not like he's being held up and you know, absolutely clobbered. But that's just, you worry about the David Carr factor. You worry about the idea that too many hits. You know, it's not quite boxing where you got like three really good fights in you in your career, and if you start getting into more than that, you got real problems. You got to be able to beat people, and you can't take a beating. But you worry about the number of hits and the way they're coming, and how, you know, you just worry about his future, because that's all that matters. And, you know, we've talked about this, like, what do you eventually shut him down? And I know Dustin believes in bubble wrap for everyone, but I think that might be pushing it, because there's very little else to watch and very little else to gain other than experience.
The one good thing Thomas Brown did was know when to
take him out. I agree.
What was that, the Arizona game that everyone was saying?
They left him out there to take a couple more sacks. Yeah, that's not a good deal. All right, we got the pick six next. We'll get to all the stories of the day, and we'll chew them over. Ruthie Polinsky is in. We're going to have some fun. It's Mully and Haw. It's The Score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
Hey, it's Mark Schler with the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. The NFL season is in full swing, and I'll be here to break down all the action like no one else can. Follow and listen to the Stinkin' Truth Podcast on your free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Are you concerned that Caleb Williams has been sacked 56 times in 13 games thus far this season? That's an average of over four times a game, putting him on track for 73. That would be the most sacked rookie in the NFL history is David Carr. He was sacked 76 times going all the way back to 2002. How concerned are you about Williams surviving the season, and will it have an impact on his career?
Well, it doesn't look like it'll have an impact on his career thus far, but yes, I think it's very concerning. I think that it is something to be aware of. I think that's too many times to be hit. It's just too many. And they obviously didn't put together the offensive line that they wanted. They made moves, but sadly, they didn't pay off, right? We know that they gave a guy $10 million and he's no longer on the team. We know that Ryan Bates, they traded for him and he hasn't been healthy all year. And we know they drafted a pre-injured guy and he hasn't been available to them very much. And Kieran Amagaji. So I think that you look at the makeshift nature of the offensive line. You know, we talked earlier about Tevin Jenkins a little bit. Greatest ability in the NFL availability, and he's going to start games, but might not finish them. I would say that they got to figure out a way of making sure that Caleb is not impacted by this. So they've been dodging bullets, and they've been careful about it a little bit. But yeah, I'm definitely. I just want him to survive this season more than anything else.
Well, that's the thing about it. We have fun with it, and I always admit when I make a mistake, which is, you know, daily, multiple times on this show. But the last thing you want to do is have Caleb Williams go into this offseason having to go through a surgery, having to rehab, and not be available for everything that's going to change. There's going to be change up at Halas Hall, mm-hmm. and everything this year and moving forward is about Caleb Williams. They're also never putting the ball down the field. We've talked about that a ton. If that's going to continue to be the case, and you're going to continue to leave him in the game, and you're going to continue to throw the ball, then maybe we need to design some plays with a two tight end set. Now, I don't know if Cole Kmet, Mercedes Lewis can block worth a damn, but their offensive tackles can't really block worth a damn either. The point is, you can't put him into shotgun and only have five guys in. The running backs also can't block worth a damn. Is Gerald Everett still on this team?
I haven't seen him in a while.
But he wasn't on the inactive list, right? He on IR?
He's on the team.
I mean, what does he exactly do for a living?
He brings Shane Waldron's offense to life.
Oh, okay.
Well, I think that's why they brought him in.
Wherever Shane Waldron ends up, maybe he can go part of that. My point is, you can't put Caleb Williams in danger.
I think both those tight ends are probably not on this roster in a year. I think
I mean, nice Mercedes Lewis, nice story and everything. But when you have more penalties than catches, okay, that's a problem.
I'm not concerned about Caleb Williams taking the hits. Of course you don't want him to get hurt and have an injured offseason. I think that's obviously a concern, but that's for any player, any quarterback. What I'm concerned about is someone coaching Caleb of how not to take sacks, largely on third down. I want to see him avoid getting hit and learn how to avoid getting hit more frequently. Of the sacks in the game on Sunday, how many of those were on Caleb?
Yeah, there were some, for sure.
I mean, at least four, I would say. And I didn't go back and torture myself and rewatch the game like Molly did quite yet and count those sacks. But I would be really interested to ask someone on staff, you know, what are you doing to help Caleb learn when not to take sacks on third down? And I'll also say that Caleb was asked about that after the game. And he had sort of this word salad answer of saying, you know, on first and second down, you know, you want to make sure you can get to third down. And then on third down, you're trying to make a play because you don't want to go off the field. So if I can't make a play, then, you know, you're holding onto the ball a little bit longer on third down, was kind of what I gathered there.
Yeah.
Throw it away, honey, sweetie, angel. Learn or try and make a play with your, like, throw it to someone. Yeah. And if it gets picked off, it gets picked off. Like, we're celebrating this lack of interceptions and turnovers. It's like, maybe we should stop doing that because they're not winning.
No.
So that's, to me, the biggest
concern.
The
punter is good, too, though. I like him.
Love Torrey Taylor. Love Torrey Taylor. All right, but what I'm saying is, I'm not concerned about his mentality or, you know, him, this breaking him.
Yes.
Obviously, physically, I am concerned, but he needs to get better at learning how, when to not take sacks. And I think the only way for him to do that is to keep playing.
When quarterbacks, what happens is your eye level drops. When you are sacked too much, that's what happened to David Carr. You get the ball and you're looking at who's coming. You're not looking at who's open. That's always been the danger of too many sacks. I don't think he's showing that, but you're right. Like, I think it was the first sack of the game. They had four guys go out on a pass route, and they were in the same spot on the field. What? It's got to be better.
Right.
Oh, boy, that's a tough question.
That's the voice of Brad Biggs. He's with you guys at 7 this morning, Biggs time. And our guy Brad Biggs suggested the Bears may give Ryan Poles a contract extension before the season is over. Do you like that idea? Is it necessary? How about the Bears having done it before when they extended Ryan Pace before Matt Nagy was hired?
I don't think it's necessary. I don't really have a feeling about it because you get fired, you get fired. Like these things don't, you know, I know obviously that kind of scared people a little bit maybe yesterday, but what I'm viewing from this Kevin Warren, Ryan Poles dynamic is there's sort of this like paternal, I'm going to mentor you. I'm going to shape you. You're going to learn from me. And it's a little like condescending is sort of the vibe that I get between the two of them. And I think we all saw that in the press conference last week and, you know, saying he's a young general manager. I think that's a compliment. And I think it's showing Kevin Warren, it's an attempted compliment. It's Kevin Warren showing his belief in Ryan Poles and his ability to maybe grow. But I don't see, I do believe that Ryan Poles deserves more time. And I don't necessarily know if a contract extension is necessary, especially if there are 2 years left on what we think is maybe what paralleled Matt Eberflus's contract. I don't see a necessity for it. And I know there's sort of this argument of, well, it could give the incoming head coach some sort of stability. The head coach is going to take the job if he wants to be the head coach of this team. Like, it's the bottom line. So I'm not really concerned about what this means one way or the other, because I do think Ryan Poles is going to have more time, whether it be with a contract extension or not.
A bunch of great points there. I don't think it's necessary that the worrying about, well, the next head coach has got to have assurances that the guy that hired him is going to be here. So if we want to believe, and I think it's a good, I believe that Ryan Poles has 2 years, he was lined up with Eberflus. I do believe that. Now, right now, behind the scenes.
Someone wrote that right. Flusie was on a 5-year deal.
And he was on a 4-year. Right. I'm just saying. The other thing, going back to the first thing you said, Ruthie, like, I mean, Kevin Warren went so out of his way on that Friday press conference to throw his arms around his general manager. I mean, like, he didn't need to do that. Just the fact that they were sitting shoulder to shoulder, that would have been enough. But then there's also stuff out there already that Kevin Warren is the one making advances with agents and front offices that we'd like to talk to your guy when the season is over, and Poles isn't doing that. But on the list of problems and things to do, you know, like this time of year especially, like a lot of people do this daily, but right now I'm always like a list, you know, got to go over here. We got to make sure we don't forget to do this. We got to pick up a ham. We got to make sure we bring a tray, you know, pick up a hostess gift for going to a park. So you make a list, right? I don't think extending the Bears general manager it's not on the list right now up at Hallis Hall. There's a lot of other, he's got a contract. He's got paper. Publicly, he's got the support of his boss So this is not on the pecking order right now. It's very, very low, in my opinion. It's not necessary.
I believe it was Adam Johns in The Athletic that wrote that Flusie was on a 5-year deal and the general manager is on a 4-year deal. Here's the thing, and a lot of people push back on this. I think a lot of things can happen over the last 4 games of the year, and as I said, most of the calls in the postgame were all about getting rid of the general manager. It's like people are still very mad at where they're at, and they're looking at the offensive line and the woes that are happening there. But I think that when they hired this guy, they had two jobs to fill, and they filled the general manager job, and then they gave him a list of 3 guys to choose from. That, to me, is not a general manager getting to name his guy, getting to have his vision unfold. So I don't know how fair it is to do it that way. Now, we can argue about whether or not Poles decided to put this team together the wrong way. In other words, not from the ball out, but like putting together the 7-on-7 team instead of worrying about the line of scrimmage. And I think that's a legitimate beef that you know, you don't get Larry Ogunjobi and then you don't worry about the 3 technique. You know, you bring in John Jones, you let him go. you think you drafted a couple guys. Where are they at? I understand how this has unfolded, and they got to get the line of scrimmage better to be a better football team. They need more on the defensive line. They certainly need more on the offensive line. So it's weird because he's an offensive line guy. That's his background, that they didn't do that. You know, what's really weird is Ian Cunningham is the number one up there. He's probably as hot a GM candidate as there is out there. He'll be interviewed by a bunch of teams.
It'll be his third season interviewing.
It's so strange that you know, if you were going to replace your guy, you'd go to his assistant. It's just weird. I don't know that they need to give him a contract extension. I think you could quietly do that easily enough. But I would like to see the guy get a legitimate shot. If you hire a guy and you say you're going to let him put a team together, I feel like they kind of have to do it, and they're kind of half-arsing it. I know that's unpopular because I know everybody wants the guy gone. But
he's done
a
lot of good things.
I think that trade was real good. I think they've done some very good things, the Montez Sweat thing. So I would not be throwing the guy out of the building. I wouldn't.
Sure, there are a lot of questions about the future. Nobody's thought about the future.
What is Bill Belichick's future? That's what we're asking in this question. What's your take on the possibility of Bill Belichick winding up as the North Carolina football coach after confirming on the Pat McAfee show that he had a, quote, couple of good conversations, end quote, with UNC Chancellor Lee Roberts? Quote, we'll see how it goes. We'll see, end quote.
I love this story. I just love everything to do with Bill. I thought it was hysterical. Did you see Tom Brady and Gronk?
Yes, it was so good.
Bill? You know, what are you going to do? Well, we don't really want you, but
you sure you
want to
come here? You don't want to come here.
If you don't want to come, we don't care. But you know, the idea of Bill recruiting is absurd, and they were very funny on it. You know, Bill has forgotten more about football than most people will ever know in their lifetime. And I love hearing him wax poetic on the game itself and what he loves about it. I would think it would be an unforgivable crime if the Bears didn't fly out to wherever they have to and just try to ask this guy about their team and what they should do. And, you know, I mean, You should get every answer he has. You should interview him, put a mock interview together if that's what you're going to do. If you have no intention of hiring him, interview him anyway and find out what's wrong with your team. That guy knows everything. I would be all over talking to Bill Belichick for this job. I'm not sure, you know, he'd be 73 at the start of the season. I'm not sure there's the job for him, but I would make sure that I interviewed him, find out what he had to say.
I agree with you that I find this story massively intriguing. I do. And I almost want him to go to college other than a pro job just for the drama of it all, just to see if it all could work out. And now that they do have general managers of college football teams, right? We were talked about this the other day on the show.
Yeah.
Didn't somebody recently leave the Bears?
Yeah,
to become,
Sean McGee, Michigan GM.
To become the GM.
Of Michigan.
Right.
Sean McGee.
Right. So, I mean, this is like a thing. So, not only, you know, Bill knows how to general manage.
Oh,
a,
also Georgia Tech.
And Georgia Tech.
And Georgia Tech. The J.J., he was a scout.
Right.
Sorry.
They
scout.
Know how to do so I just, people's like, well, he's not going to understand NIL. He's not going to, recruiting isn't recruiting anymore. It's NIL. You think Bill Belichick can fundraise? I think people in North Carolina have dough. I think that's a big money school. I think, maybe I'm wrong. I think North Carolina is a pretty big money school. Not like all time big money school, but like a big money school. They've got boosters. They've got supporters.
Mike Jordan's got a lot of money.
He's got a lot of money. You know, do you think the Jordan brand on every player, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I mean, do you think Bill Belichick's in a person's living room, in a mom or dad in the living room, or he's, you know, texting, he'll get better. You know, this is part of what he's doing. You know, I promise you, if you come here, I will get you ready to play in the NFL.
Oh,
boom, boom, yeah. Right? Boom. I think this could be wildly interesting, but I could also see it. I just don't think it happens. It would be wildly interesting to see Bill Belichick here in Chicago with our Bears. That would be wildly interesting too.
Initially, I thought this was Bill just trying to get his name circulating again and getting people interested. And now I'm kind of, the more I hear about it, the more I think maybe he is interested in it. And he is the ultimate football nerd. Like, he loves football so much to the point where I think he would be willing to try something new when it comes to football and to be, you know, maybe the greatest coach of all time, for him to go down in history and try and do something in that sort of phase of football in college football would be something new and different and exciting. And if he can win there, you know, you're talking about Bill Belichick, man, what didn't he do, you know? And so, and also, this is a man with a massive ego who thinks he's the greatest of all time, knows he's the greatest of all time. So he's wanting to kind of say, man, I don't need the NFL. Maybe he's saying something like that. And I don't know, but I'm fascinated by the story. I loved the Brady, Gronk, and Jules segment talking about, I mean, and this is, it's just iconic hearing them talk about it. And also very refreshing to see Tom Brady kind of smile and make fun of Bill after the way that things ended in New England. I always love seeing that sort of stuff. But I do believe that if the Bears do not try and just speak with, as you said, what'd you say? It's a crime.
Oh, my God.
It's a felony.
What is it?
Be arrested. It's, if you don't talk to him and just pick his brain.
That's it.
I mean,
take notes.
I don't, my concern with Belichick real quick is just that I don't see him. Yeah, you can say, I'm going to get you ready for the NFL. But on a day-to-day routine basis, connecting with that generation, and I know David Haw would say, want to remind me about the girlfriend at this moment.
Right? He's connected with that generation.
But I don't know if he can really relate to. You're seeing the Deion Sanders of the world that are firing guys up and getting them motivated. I just don't see Bill Belichick sort of connecting with this Gen Z sort of.
There's also a report that Steven would be on his staff and would take over. So it's almost like he's trying to get his kid a job. Yeah, I mean, there's that element.
You know, it's a fair question, Mike.
That is the voice of our guy, Bruce Levine. We'll probably talk to him tomorrow. A little tease there.
Yeah.
Chris Getz has signed former White Sox. Chris Getz has signed now a former Cub and a current White Sox, Mike Tauchman, to the team. How do you think he fits in over on the South side?
Great. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I get excited.
Okay. I forgot that I was supposed to go first there.
You are.
I love this.
Oh.
I love this. I think it is so cool, and it sort of sets the tone for the White Sox offseason. Mike Tauchman is one of those players that you watch, and he just fires you up. He'll make a play in the outfield. He'll hit a walk-off something. He is a tone setter. And for him to be a Chicagoland guy is awesome. And I think it's sort of a culture-setting move for the White Sox right now. You want to, you know, get us fired up about would you say Mike Tauchman's sort of an above average
he's
player?
For the White Sox.
For the White Sox.
He's like a superstar.
You took the words out of my mouth. I mean, this is a personality. He can be the face of your team if you need him to be. Because he's a great person. He's an exciting player. I love this. I woke up today and I saw this and I said, oh, baby, let's go, Southsiders.
It's great.
I agree with what you said, and it bothers me. I've been bummed out. I've mentioned it on the Take the North podcast. Now, Mike Tauchman wasn't going to start for the Cubs, but the Cubs are going to have an injury in the outfield, and he was a fantastic fourth outfielder.
Yeah.
He'll be a good first three outfielders for the White Sox, but for what? It was like 2-point-something million, like the qualifying, one of these things. Show me then. Show me Cubs what you're doing. Who's going to be the Cubs fourth outfield? Now maybe, maybe it's Owen Casey, right? Maybe they bring that guy up, right? But I'm just saying, I like this move. He was good with the media. They need some more guys over there that are good with the media. He's had some big moments, and I'd like to see what could he do playing 140 games next year, right? Like, as an everyday guy, either in left or right. I like it. I mean, you could do a whole hell of a lot worse than Mike Tauchman, right?
I wanted them to get him immediately when the Cubs cut him. I suggested that next morning. The Sox don't have players. This guy's a good baseball player. He's a seriously good baseball player. He's the Palatine Pounder. You can ship a bunch of Sox hats out to the Palatine area. Maybe you develop a new fan base. I mean, come on. He's a local guy. He was really good with the Cubs. Won games for them. And you're right, Dustin. He's a good fourth outfielder. I don't know what role they have in mind for him, but they need everything. And this is a Major League Baseball player. I am delighted by this. And don't trade Garrett Crochet to the Cubs. I love it.
Palatine Pounder.
Did you like hearing from Craig Counsell from the owners' meetings yesterday? What stood out from some of his comments? And do you like the idea? He said the Cubs roster will look different than it does right now in spring training.
Well, I mean, there's all sorts of rumors about Cody Bellinger. You see that now the supposedly Detroit was involved. They were talking about a couple of guys from that team. The Yankees, obviously, that seems like an obvious one for them to, now that they've lost Juan Soto, just makes a lot of sense. I think that they're going to be different looking. I'm very curious. He talked about the number of good young players. I'm very curious what all of this means about them bringing guys up and how quickly they're bringing them up and how they're going to be using those guys, if they're going to try to make a trade, if they're going to package a bunch of these guys, whether it be for Crochet or someone else. It'll be really – I mean, I understand how well their young talent matches up with the ability to add a lot without spending Juan Soto money. But I think that they've got a lot of good young players, and it's time to start seeing them. So I like that he said that the roster will look a lot different spring training. I'm looking forward to that.
That's what screams. I mean, that's the headline.
Yep.
That the roster will look different than it does, you know, right now.
Right now.
Right?
Yep.
And we heard from his boss, who we're going to talk about in a minute, talking about, you know, his ideas. We'll get to that in just a moment. But this is, it's interesting. You know, the bullpen obviously is going to look very different. But, you know, there's also now rumors that maybe Seiya Suzuki could be on the move. So maybe the Yankees are interested in Seiya or Bellinger. Yeah, yes, Seiya Suzuki has a no trade, but I'm guessing he would probably waive it to get out there and prove what he could do in that big market, seeing all these dollars that are out there right now. So I think it's wildly interesting. I think we're hopefully, fingers crossed, going to be very happy with how the Cubs go into spring training.
I enjoyed hearing from Craig Counsell, the second longest tenured coach.
Oh, is that bizarre?
In the market.
That's so wild.
Yeah, Chicago's own Craig Counsell. I think that what struck me the most was definitely the conversation about how different this roster could potentially look. I'm interested to see what happens with Seiya. I felt, Dustin, and correct me if I'm wrong, but just listening to Craig Counsell talk about Seiya, I felt like he was going to be a part of this team moving forward. And I, you know, they can always change those things, whatever. But I was interested to hear him talk about Cody Bellinger too, and how he felt like Cody really changed after the trade deadline, changed the way that team looked offensively. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how the roster shifts and changes, and if it really does look that different in spring training.
It better.
And I know we're going to get to what I really want to talk about this next question, pick six.
Wow, that's a good question.
That's the voice of John Heyman, and he's got all the information on the Juan Soto signing. And wait till you hear about one of the things the Yankees would not do, supposedly, according to John Heyman's reporting. With a day to consider the results, are you surprised Juan Soto left the Yankees for the Mets, or was the 15-year, $765 million deal just too lucrative to pass up? Will the Mets regret the deal, or is Soto too much of a game changer to worry about it?
I think there's more to the story, perhaps, of why he left the Yankees. I mean, the money's huge, massive. But I do kind of feel like there's more to it because the offers were, I mean, from what we've seen, relatively not that different. And for the Yankees to maybe not come up and match, maybe he said, that's it. Like, I just think there's maybe more to the story of why he wanted to leave the Yankees, but he gets to keep his home, probably, which is nice. I think that I really just want to talk about what Jed Hoyer said about Soto. Quote, there is nothing that precludes us from being involved in those players. We did organizationally decide not to pursue that one. It doesn't mean in the future we won't, but that was one we didn't. Why? We didn't pursue? What? Just ask a couple questions. See? Yeah, we don't think he's that good. I mean, what? I can't really wrap my head around that, so... that's where I stand on that.
I'm okay with the Cubs not being in on this. I think 15 years, $765 million is just absolutely ridiculous. But these are the rules that baseball operates under. I do not think the Mets will regret it. He's a young man. Like, he's coming into his prime. He's a guy that bet on himself. Yes. He's also not a, remember in the playoffs, you know, he had like one of the most epic playoff at bats, yes. Right? He's a guy who will choke up on a bat, right? He will, He's like a student of the game. You can tell he like watches pitchers, knows tendencies. Like he's really, he's not just up there swinging and looking to throw bats. Like that's not what you got to respect this guy, right? I don't think the Mets are going to regret it at all. But Heyman's coming out with you guys at 8:25. And just wait till you hear. I don't want to bring it up here. This is a tease. Just wait till you hear about something that the Mets were willing to do that the Yankees were not willing to do that might have turned the table.
So I got to tell you, like the Yankees, right? The Yankees are a brand name in sports. The Yankees are one of the biggest teams in the world. And the idea that you are going to go play for the Mets, and I get it, the money, you know, we heard all along that he was going to take every dollar and that whoever gave him the most money, he was going to go to. But, you know, left-handed hitter, that porch with the Yankees, I just feel like there's just so much of an aura about the Yankees over the history of baseball that, you know, he's there with Aaron Judge. It's just crazy to me that he chose the Mets.
Right.
But the answer is he chose money. The thing that stops you is 15 years. 15 years. Like, who is promised 15 years? You know, I was talking to a friend of mine, and he said, he's a little bit older than me. He's like, I'll be in my 70s, and I might not even be alive when that contract's over. And I was like, well, that took a dark turn. That is very dark. He's like, I'm being realistic. 15 years from now, there are so many things that could hit you. So many, and I'm like, well, if you're 26, I don't think you're worried about that. I think that you feel like you're going to play. And I think if you're putting a team together, didn't we learn with the Ohtani deal that you can win a World Series when you do something like this? So I guess the Mets aren't done. We'll talk to John about that, too. There's still a lot of things that could happen. I mean, it is an extraordinary length of contract and amount of money. I do believe he's a generational talent. I just think, you know, I wish we had multi-billionaire owners that were fans of the team and just wanted to throw their cash around. Congratulations to Steve Cohen. All right, we got the extra point next. Mully and Haw, we got Ruthie Politsky here today on The Score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the Extra Point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
We've talked about the possibility of changing the college football playoff bracket in the future to reflect the best teams instead of conference affiliation. Do you believe that will happen? And what would it take to engender such a change? Does something dramatic need to occur?
You know, I think I was talking a little bit with David off the air yesterday, and I was telling him the SEC needs to somehow, and they could easily, win the national title. But they need to, like, meet in the national title. Like, the SEC needs to put its stamp on college football, even though they already have. But they need to do it this year when they were all cannibalizing each other and losing three games. And I think if that happens, if they somehow, you look at it, it's conceivable, but it would be difficult because there are awful good teams there. But I do think this is whacked out. I mean, I love that we're talking about it. I love that there's 12 teams. I think it's, and we knew that we'd always be talking about the last bit of it, the final kind of teams. You know, this has nothing to do. But to go from 4 to 12 is fantastic. I just think that the results, that the so-called cream of the crop needs to rise, and then that will eventually get them to a point. It's going to happen. I don't know if it's going to happen in the next couple of years, 5 years, but eventually they will seed this thing. And, you know, it's just too big an advantage to have a bye week in a home game. That's just helping teams almost too much. And if you have the best teams with that, like you do in every sport, then you're gonna be able to figure out exactly who's going to win the title. But I think that this throws a complete wrench in the works. So there's part of me that likes it. But there's also part of me that feels some of these teams don't deserve it. And it's hard not to feel that way about it. So I'm all for getting the best teams in the championship games. I really am.
Now, debating, arguing, discussing, going over topics in sports is what we do. I mean, this segment is predicated on that. But the big one didn't happen on Sunday. We were all waiting, holding our breath. Would Alabama get the spot over SMU? SMU got the spot. Clemson won the game. SMU got in because they battled back. Okay, so that was going to be the one we were going to maybe argue about, or at least maybe down south they were going to argue about it. But can we just, like, okay, it's set up. Okay, we went from four to. Can we just see how it plays out? Like, let's see before we just, like, well, next year. Here's the thing about us at the conference championship games as an example. If you take away the element of if you win the conference championship game, the four games we had last weekend, that's who gets the bye, potentially. One of them didn't get the bye.
Right.
Okay.
Thank God.
Well, then we're going to get into what you and David gave me a hard time about, deservedly so maybe, because this is what we do, when I was suggesting that the Oregon quarterback not play against then we thought it was going to be Ohio State, because you wouldn't want him hurt for the playoff in general. So if you take the element of the bye out of this, why in the world would any team that was already at least in the top four play in that conference championship game? Because that's what's there to be played for, is the bye. And it's like a three-week break. I mean, teams can get awfully healthy, right? I mean, or there's going to be the rust factor. Yeah. You know, how Arizona State is on a heater. They are playing great football right now. They're playing so good that I think if they were playing this Saturday against Oregon, they'd give them a really good game, maybe even beat them. But having like 20 days off till they play again might not be a great thing for Arizona State. But let's just let this play out. Like, let's just enjoy it. Never. Let's enjoy something in sports.
No,
let's just enjoy this.
Never.
This one, I like to make mountains out of molehills. I do. But this one, I want to enjoy. I want to just, let's see how it plays out.
Did you write the question, Molly, or did Dustin write the question? You wrote the question.
Okay. I only like, kind of maybe put him in order.
Okay. It's like, is Dustin mad about his own question? No. I'm with you, Dustin. I think we need to watch this. And I do think with every year, the committee and the people who are making these decisions are going to evolve with how it plays out. I think that's only natural. But I love everything about the drama. I love who's in. I love who's out. I love watching and seeing who is mad that they're, you know, don't get a home game or they don't get the. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's great. I love watching Mario Cristobal just grovel. I mean, this is like. This to me is pure entertainment, and I don't have a dog in the fight because I'm still riding high from my Michigan Wolverines beating Ohio State.
Congratulations.
We could have lost every game this season and beaten Ohio State, and I would have been this happy today.
Well, I mean, you have the title in your hip pocket.
Oh, yeah, that too.
And
oh, yeah.
Four
Thanks
straight
for reminding
wins
me.
Against Ohio State.
But listen, I think this is the drama is beautiful. It's only going to get better. And I want to see how it all shakes out. And if the last team standing is the best team, they did something right. And I think they deserve some credit for that.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm fascinated by it. I can't wait. But I do want Alabama in there. I do. I kind of want Ole Miss in there. I do. I just like having the best teams play. I'm not sure. Yeah, Boise's got a good running back. But I'm not sure. I mean, I don't want Clemson anywhere near this tournament. I don't think they had a good enough season. I don't care what they won. Just don't want them. I'm tired of hearing Dabo Sweeney. Enough of him. All right, we got to get to your phone calls. 312-644-6767. We've got Ruthie in this morning. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Mornings with Mully and Haw on 670 the Score.
Mully and Haw, Ruthie Polinsky is in this morning for David, who is out, and we've been having some fun, and we're talking about anything you want to. 312-644-6767. Let's start with Kevin. Kevin, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, sports fans. Happy holidays to all of you. Look, I don't know Thomas Brown from Charlie Brown. However, his coaching resume is not that impressive, so I don't understand why people are all of a sudden throwing flowers at his feet saying he should get a legitimate shot to be the Bears head coach. He goes from the running backs coach for the Rams, where he won a Super Bowl, which is awesome, mm-hmm. feather in his cap. But then he goes to be the OC at Carolina, where they went 2-15 with a number one overall pick in Bryce Young. The Bears, in their infinite wisdom, then decide to hire him as their passing game coordinator. And then he just falls into being the OC and then falls into being the head coach. Why all of a sudden, all because he's not Matt Eberflus, is that his best quality? Because I don't know other areas where it's like, well, you're going from passing game coordinator to be considered a head coach without having to earn your stripes as an OC. What am I missing here?
Yeah, it is a big jump, Kevin. That's fair. I think what you're missing is this idea that the Bears, you know, when you hear players talk about aura. Now, Olin Krutz told us aura doesn't win football games. Aura doesn't win individual battles on the football field. And I agree with that. But the guy does seem like he's capable of communicating. And they did. He's got a vibe to him. There were great things said about him by Sean McVay, who is one of the best coaches in the NFL. And if you look around the league, you'll see half the league worked for Sean McVay at some point or other. If he sneezes on you, you are eligible to get an offensive coordinator position. And he really likes Thomas Brown. But my only concern with moving him as much as they did is this idea that it's putting a lot on his plate instead of just dealing with the quarterback.
Well, let's also not forget that Thomas Brown is responsible for a complete resurgence of the offense.
Yes.
Like, of the Bears offense. Like, I know they haven't won games, but when he took over as offensive play caller and Shane Waldron was fired, I mean, the offense looked completely different in that Green Bay game. So I think that's sort of why people were excited about seeing what he could do, because he did sort of contribute to a newfound energy and promise for the Bears even before he was named interim head coach.
And the quarterback has played better.
Yeah.
The problem with the Bears, and I mean, it's been a longstanding problem, when they finished their draft and they got the quarterback and they got the wide receiver, when they finished the first round of the draft, I thought, wow, they brought in touchdowns. They're going to score touchdowns. That is the kind of move you make, to score touchdowns. We haven't seen that yet, not even under Hinder.
Two from
Thomas Brown. So you need more. They got two. You just need more, and that's all. And I mean, listen, this is his opportunity. You wouldn't stand in anyone's way, but boy, I mean, it's a big jump to go from passing game coordinator to head coach.
Yeah, and I know it's obviously not ideal to – you obviously are going to jump on the opportunity to take over of offensive – play caller and B, head interim head coach. But this is not a great situation for Thomas Brown to just kind of fall into. It's not his offense. It's right. not his, you know, it's not his team. He didn't have an offseason. And now to be a head coach when he's just sort of getting into the rhythm of calling plays for the offense, that's not his offense. He now has to like manage the game and make sure the defense isn't like falling off the rails, which they did. So I it's just not a great situation for him to fall into. And I think he's just, you know, you're trying to make the most of it in a situation where you feel like you're auditioning in a very public way for head coach.
All right, we're going to run it by Big Z. Big's time next. Mully and Haw, Ruthie Polinsky, and today on The Score.